The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, I'm here. I really am here. Oh my goodness, what a day this has been. It is a Tuesday, and not your typical Tuesday. So, first of all, welcome to the show. I hope you are okay. I hope you got to see some of the first hearing of the Special Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. Because, oh my God, was it powerful. Now, I was a little worried because, as I told you yesterday, I did have a guest book for today. Actually, I had two. One guest we will talk to a little later in the hour. I'll tell you about that in a moment. But the other, I was supposed to speak today with Julie K. Brown. She is the reporter for the Miami Herald who wrote the book Perversion of Justice. And she's the reporter who broke the Jeffrey Epstein story, really, and just did some dogged reporting on it. And the first thing this morning, I get an email from her publicist saying, we're so sorry. She needs to reschedule. Something came up today. And at first I was kind of, oh, great. You know, but as the day went on, I realized this was a blessing in disguise. So Julie K. Brown will be on with us on Monday. It'll give me more time to read through the book and prepare for the interview. And it also gave me time this morning to watch this hearing and pull some audio and video clips to share with you, because everyone should have watched this hearing. And I know not everyone could, because a lot of people work. So now we have the time to get into it. It was intense. And the thing is, we already knew what happened, right? You and I, we've been following along for the last 6 months, and we know exactly what happened, despite all the naysayers, despite all the lying liars on the right. It's astounding to me that there are people who just deny reality. But you know, we've talked about that a million times. Let's get into this. So let me tell you who the other guest is, though. You know that I'm in Florida, and I really tried to be part of the Florida Democratic Party. I became a precinct committee person and for this progressive takeover that was going to happen. And long story short, the Florida Democratic Party is fucked up. It's the only words I can use to describe it. They are just so horrible. Just really horrible. So a little later on in the hour, we're going to deal with the hearing first, and we may stay on late, do a bit of overtime today to get this in. But I'm going to speak with the new incoming president of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida. So these are the progressives of the progressives. And there's a dust up within the Florida Democratic Party where the chairman, who was voted on by the Florida Democrats, who it just should not be in that position, in an editorial for the Miami Herald, pointed a finger at the Progressive Caucus and called them out for their stance on the Cuba protests. Way to air your dirty laundry in public. Now, you'll know Manny Diaz did not call out the Republican Party or, you know, anybody on the right. It's a circular firing squad. It's so ridiculous. So anyway, we'll get to that later in the hour. I want to start off just today, finally, the first hearing of this newly formed Special Select Committee on January 6th. And, you know, just when you thought, look, we knew we had seen a lot of the videos have been coming out, you know, the body cam videos from a lot of the cops. We saw more today than we have in the past. And just when you thought you had seen it all, comes something else. I'll tell you, one of the people who there were four four officers who testified today. That's what this first hearing was about, hearing from the law enforcement professionals who put their bodies on the line that day and all got pretty beaten up, both literally and figuratively. So we had Daniel Hodges. Oh my God. I'm going to start with Daniel Hodges because his story is just so powerful. And it's sad. And we all, I mean, he was one of the first faces of the people injured that day that we got to see, because we actually saw the video of Officer Daniel Hodges being crushed in this doorway before the day was done, while it was still going on. This is the picture. For those of you watching on video, you can't, you know, of course you remember this. He was caught in between this doorway as the crowd was pushing from one side and the police were behind him and he had nowhere to go. Well, today he talked us through what happened, and oh my goodness, it was terrifying. And here, let me just play for you that segment once the video opens up here. How anybody could watch this without feeling nauseous, I don't know. By the way, why is Progressive Voices dead air? It shouldn't be dead air. PV is dead air. They have me showing up there. Input, sound card. It should be 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, it's not feeding that. All right. Well, while I play this video, I'm going to try to figure that out. Thank you, Karate Joe, for letting me know. I don't know why Progressive Voices is feeding dead air. I'm feeding Progressive Voices dead air. That's not good. All right. I will work on that. Let me play this video for you. Again, he is a D.C. Metropolitan Police officer. His name is Daniel Hodges. And hold on. Let me open it up this way so that you get to see his face and not mine while I try to figure out the sound issue with Progressive Voices. All right. So here's Officer Daniel Hodges testifying this morning.
The two sides were at a stalemate at a metal door frame that sat in the middle of the hallway. At the front line, I inserted myself so the frame was at my back in an effort to give myself something to brace against and provide additional strength when pushing forward. Unfortunately, soon after I secured this position, the momentum shifted and we lost the ground that got me there. On my left was a man with a clear riot shield stolen during the assault. He slammed it against me and, with all the weight of the bodies pushing behind him, trapped me. My arms were pinned and effectively useless, trapped against either the shield on my left or the door frame on my right. With my posture granting me no functional strength or freedom of movement, I was effectively defenseless and gradually sustaining injury from the increasing pressure of the mob. Directly in front of me, a man seized the opportunity of my vulnerability, grabbed the front of my gas mask, and used it to beat my head against the door. He switched to pulling it off my head, the straps stretching against my skull and straining my neck. He never uttered any words I recognized, but opted instead for guttural screams. I remember him foaming at the mouth. He also put his cell phone in his mouth so that he had both hands free to assault me. Eventually, he succeeded in stripping away my gas mask, and a new rush of exposure to CS and OC spray hit me. The mob of terrorists were coordinating their efforts now, shouting, "Heave! Ho!" as they synchronized, pushing their weight forward, crushing me further against the metal door frame. The man in front of me grabbed my baton that I still held in my hands, and in my current state, I was unable to retain my weapon. He bashed me in the head and face with it, rupturing my lip and adding additional injury to my skull. At this point, I knew I couldn't sustain much more damage and remain upright. At best, I would collapse and be a liability to my colleagues. At worst, be dragged out into the crowd and lynched. Unable to move or otherwise signal the officers behind me that I needed to fall back, I did the only thing that I could do and screamed for help.
Oh, God, it's just heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. So that's the end of that segment. I've got tons of audio. By the way, phone lines are open. Should you care to call in to talk about what went on? You know, I just saw something on Twitter a few minutes ago. a reporter asked, I'm trying to figure out what the deal is with PV, and I don't know. Progressive Voices, I'm sorry. If you usually listen on Progressive Voices and can't hear anything, I would tell you to go to NicoleSandlerStream.com, and you should be able to get a backup stream there, except if you are trying to listen on Progressive Voices, you're not hearing me. I don't know what it is. There's only so much I could do while I'm on the air, but I'll keep working on it. I hate that that's happening. I'm so sorry. All right, so back to this. So the phone number, 954-889-6410, if you care to chime in. So I saw somebody, I'm not going to be able to find it now, just a reporter asked Mitch McConnell if he listened to any of the hearing this morning, and he said, no, I was busy working. Really? Really? What's so much more important? And here's the thing. You have Mitch McConnell and you have Kevin McCarthy, both of whom are in the running for the Worst Human Being in the World Award. In case you it slipped your memory, I swear I'm going to keep these two clips on the top of my desktop so that I can play them over and over again. This was Mitch McConnell the night of January 6th. After I'll play it in a second because I see somebody calling in. Hi, who's this from the 901 area code? Who is this?
Hi, Nicole. This is Michael from Memphis. How are you?
Hey, Michael from Memphis. Okay, how are you doing?
Oh, no. I got something to complain about. But yeah, I listened to the hearing this morning, and the fact that you already have him in full spin mode, well, that's propaganda. It's propaganda. Yep. And by the end of this, it's going to be, well, no, all the cops are lying. You know, don't believe what you saw.
Right.
It's commonplace, it's commonplace for us because, again, you saw Rodney King get the hell beat of him 30 years ago, and they said, well, that's not what you thought it was either. So I don't know why people are so shocked by this, but this is worse because it was treason, and they're trying to dress it up like, it's not that big of a deal.
Right. It didn't really happen. I was on a friend's Facebook page who was commenting on how powerful the testimony was, and some idiot on there said something to the effect of, well, next they should try Nancy Pelosi because she's more responsible for this than anyone. What? Where do they get
because
this shit?
That's the tagline they've been given. I mean, the bastard said it yesterday. I forgot which one of those cows said it. Gomert or Gonad or whatever.
Oh, Gomert. Louis Gomert. Yeah.
Yeah, I like Gonad better, but he was saying that, and now those are the marching orders. Because if you say it, and it works with Hitler, so why not?
Yeah.
If you say it enough times, people begin to believe it. I was at the office, and people were saying, well, how does this compare to the Rostock? It's the same thing, only that worked and this didn't.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the military. It's the only reason why right now he doesn't control the government. That's the only reason.
You're right.
He didn't get the military's buy-in.
Milley, I'm telling you, Milley is the guy. I think Milley is the reason we are still standing here as a nation. Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Oh, I agree 100%.
Yep.
No, but I enjoyed him. I'm listening and that whole thing. People need to take a listen to, especially the line where the people say, well, you know about the hugs and kisses. He said, well, I'm still getting rehab for all the hugs and kisses.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so let me get back to some of these clips because I've got some really powerful testimony here that I want to share because I know a lot of people didn't get to hear it. So thank you for calling. Always great to hear from you. Stay safe down there in Memphis, and we'll talk again soon.
All right.
All right, thanks. All right, so again, there were these four officers. Now, one that we heard from not too long ago, this Harry Dunn, this guy was amazing. We heard him, I think, I heard him specifically before today's hearing talking about being called the N-word, being harassed, for being a black man. And let me play for you a couple of clips from Harry Dunn. This guy... Again, hearing these grown men on the verge of tears, knowing what they went through, knowing what, how they were attacked while they were doing their job, protecting the Capitol is just, is powerful and shocking and stunning all at the same time. So here's Harry Dunn.
Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger are being lauded as courageous heroes And while I agree with that notion, why? Because they told the truth? Why is telling the truth hard? I guess in this America, it is. Us four officers, we would do January 6th all over again. We wouldn't stay home because we knew it was going to happen. We would show up. That's courageous. That's heroic. So what I ask from you all is to get to the bottom of what happened. And that includes, like, I echo the sentiments of all of the other officers sitting here. I use an analogy to describe what I want as a hitman. If a But not only does the hitman go to jail, but the person who hired them does.
Oh, yeah.
There was an attack carried out on January 6th, and a hitman sent them. I want you to get to the bottom of that. So, thank you.
Yes, a hitman sent them. I want you to get to the bottom of that. See, that came at the end. Actually, I should have saved that at the end because somebody had asked one of them, and maybe it was that one, what would you like to see done? What do you want to tell us? What do we need to do? And that was Harry Dunn's answer, which is get whoever called the shots here. And I love the hitman analogy because that works. We'll get to some of the other answers in a bit. But here's the other testimony I wanted to play from Harry Dunn. It's on the racial attacks he endured on January 6th.
And in response, they yelled, "No, man, this is our house."
Oh, let me back this up just a little bit because I want you to hear the beginning of that. Here we go.
I told them to just leave the Capitol. And in response, they yelled, "No, man, this is our house."
Yeah.
President Trump invited us here. We're here to stop the steal. Joe Biden is not the president.
Something with the audio. Let's try this again. Here we go.
I responded, "Well, I voted for Joe Biden. Does my vote not count?
No.
Am I nobody?" That prompted a torrent of racial epithets. One woman in a pink MAGA shirt yelled, "You hear that, guys? This nigger voted for Joe Biden."
Oh, my God.
Then the crowd, perhaps around 20 people, joined in screaming, "Boo, fucking nigger."
Oy.
No one had ever called me a nigger while wearing the uniform of a Capitol Police officer. In the days following the attempted insurrection, other black officers shared with me their own stories of racial abuse on January 6th. One officer told me he had never, and in his entire 40 years of life, been called a nigger to his face. And that streak ended on January 6th. Yet another black officer later told me he had been confronted by insurrectionists in the Capitol who told him, "Put your gun down and we'll show you what kind of nigger you really are."
Wow.
To be candid, the rest of the afternoon is a blur.
I'll bet the rest of the afternoon is a blur. Can you imagine that kind of abuse while you're confronted with this? I mean, he's a U.S. Capitol police officer. He said earlier that they knew there were going to be protests, but there was never any indication that something along this magnitude was going to happen. And for all the idiots who want to blame Nancy Pelosi, I guess I can't keep up with the chat room, but it looks like there must be a troll in there as well. It's reprehensible. The fact that this went on and the fact that those idiots are, you know, making excuses for them. Oh, so before I took the phone call before, this is what I was going to play for you. The night on January 6th, they cleared out the Capitol, right? To get all the terrorists out, their words, the words of these four police officers, not mine, but it's more fitting than rioters or even insurrectionists. They are terrorists. And it was Officer, what's his name? Hodges, who actually has been using that word, and Jamie Raskin asked him about it, and he pulled out the legal law definition of what a domestic terrorist is, and he read it, and he said that's what these people were. They were domestic terrorists. And so it was the right word. So, so anyway, the night of January 6th, after the Capitol was cleared, the members of Congress came back in and said, we're not going to let these terrorists keep us from doing the job we came here to do, which was to certify the election. Mitch McConnell, then at the time, still the Senate majority leader, even though that was the day of the special election when Ossoff and Warnock won their elections in Georgia for the Democrats to take control of the Senate, even though that happened that day, the control of the Senate hadn't yet gone from McConnell to Schumer. But Mitch McConnell got up on the floor of the Senate that night, that very night, January 6th, and said this.
There's no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. No question about it. The people who stormed this building believed they were acting on the wishes and instructions of their president. And having that belief was a foreseeable consequence of the growing crescendo of false statements, conspiracy theories, and reckless hyperbole, which the defeated president kept shouting into the largest megaphone on planet Earth.
Yep. Yeah, that was Mitch McConnell. And you know what? He was shocker, being honest, because he figured at that point, there's no denying what we just lived through. There's no denying what just happened in this august chamber. We were attacked. And I guess he thought that common sense and love of country and, you know, the oath all these members took to the Constitution to uphold the Constitution would take precedent and that, you know, saner minds would prevail. What he learned over the next few days is, oh, not so fast. But that also doesn't tell me why Kevin McCarthy, a week later, said basically the same thing. So Mitch McConnell made that statement that night. Kevin McCarthy, this was a week later. It was January 13th when Kevin McCarthy on the floor of the House said this.
The president bears responsibility for Wednesday's attack on Congress by mob rioters. He should have immediately denounced the mob when he saw what was unfolding. These facts require immediate action by President Trump.
Yep.
Accept his share of responsibility. Quell the brewing unrest, and ensure President-elect Biden is able to successfully begin his term.
Wow. So what happened there? He got his tushy spanked by the former guy. Seriously, Trump yelled at him. And then Kevin McCarthy got on a plane and flew at the time down to Mar-a-Lago to kiss not the ring, but the mushroom dick attached to the orange idiot and do whatever he wants him to do. Kevin McCarthy has no backbone, no morals, no, moral compass, no nothing. He's got nothing, nothing. So that's why, you know, when he put forth five names for the commission, two of whom are flamethrowers, the two Jims, Gymnasium Jordan, who doesn't deserve to be on any commission, and this other gym guy who was supposed to be the lead, who's out there this morning saying it's Nancy Pelosi's fault because she didn't fund the Capitol Police. She didn't protect the Capitol. There was no need for any more protection if it were a normal day. If not for the Trump terrorists, that's what they are, the Trump domestic terrorists, the coverage, the protection they had at the Capitol was just fine. It wasn't until you had this orange guy who, was trying to pull off a coup on the country, trying to overturn a legitimate election, the will of the people to stay in power, that all of a sudden we needed more protection because his crazy followers were getting violent, following his orders, by the way. So McCarthy puts up these five names. Pelosi says no to two of them. And McCarthy said, then none of them are going to do it. Meh. And so Pelosi had already named Liz Cheney to the panel. And then she said, well, may as well bring the other guy, the one other Republican with a backbone, with a spine, who cares more about country than party, Adam Kinzinger. So, you know, I don't know much about this guy. He seems to be real. He seems to be genuine. When I heard him talk today, I was impressed. This is Adam Kinzinger. This is part of his opening statement. And I don't know. He won me over.
This is. I never expected a day to be quite as emotional for me as it has been. I've talked to a number of you and gotten to know you. I think it's important to tell you right now, though. You guys may, like, individually feel a little broken. You guys all talk about the effects you have to deal with, and, you know, you talk about the impact of that day. But you guys won. You guys held.
He's trying to hold back the tears.
Democracies are not defined by our bad days. We're defined by how we come back from bad days, how we take accountability for that. And for all the overheated rhetoric surrounding this committee, our mission is very simple. It's to find the truth, and it's to ensure accountability. Like most Americans, I'm frustrated that 6 months after a deadly insurrection breached the United States Capitol for several hours on live television, we still don't know exactly what happened. Why? Because many in my party have treated this as just another partisan fight. It's toxic, and it's a disservice to the officers and their families, to the staff and the employees on the Capitol complex, to the American people who deserve the truth, and to those generations before us who went to war to defend self-governance.
Right.
Because self-governance is at stake. And it's why I agreed to serve on this committee. I want to know what happened that day, but more importantly, I want all Americans to be able to trust the work this committee does and get the facts out there free of conspiracy. This cannot continue to be a partisan fight.
Nope.
I'm a Republican. I'm a conservative. But in order to heal from the damage caused that day, we need to call out the facts. It's time to stop the outrage and the conspiracies that fuel the violence and division in this country. And most importantly, we need to reject those that promote it.
Hell yeah. Wow. He deserves a standing ovation for that. And that was just the beginning of his statement. At the end of his statement, you know, and he got his composure together and he held back the tears. By the way, a little later on, when Adam Schiff gave his opening statement, he too choked up. And he said, I didn't expect to be this emotional. He said it must be an Adam thing. I don't think it was an Adam thing. I think it was a human thing. So anyway, here's how Adam Kinzinger finished.
Thank you to our witnesses.
His statement. Oh, that's the wrong one. Hold on.
Emotional.
That's the first one again. Sorry. This is the ending of the statement. So, yeah.
The way I view it at that time, it was, I'm an American, and the person right next to me is an American, and I would do everything.
Now, this is Police Sergeant Gunnell, who was talking with Kinzinger. This might have been, I think this was the end of Kinzinger's opening statement, and maybe he asked Gunnell a question in it. I'm not sure. Oh, no, Kinzinger didn't get an opening statement. I'm confused. It was his questioning, but he started with a statement, and then he asked Sergeant Gunnell a question. I'm a little slow sometimes, but I get it eventually. Okay, so here's this part.
The way I view it at that time, it was, I'm an American, and the person right next to me is an American, and I would do everything possibly for me to defend him and the country at that time.
You guys did that? You guys did that in the blue?
Yes, sir.
And I want to say that is the mission of this committee. We may have our deep differences on other policy issues, but we are all Americans today. And we thank you for holding that line.
And with that, his time was up. Adam Kinzinger, again, choking back tears. Yes, he's a Republican, but he's a human first. He's showing his humanity, something that none of the others are. Now, I don't have her video, but let me play for you a little bit of Liz Cheney when she got to speak first after, I think, Benny Thompson, he, you know, gave her the floor next. And here's a little bit of what she said when she began. I think.
Every American, I hope, will be able to hear your testimony today and will watch the videos. The videos show the unbelievable violence and the inexcusable and intolerable cruelty that you all faced, and people need to know the truth. I want to begin by reflecting briefly on the investigation that we're launching today. Every one of us here on the dais voted for and would have preferred that these matters be investigated by an independent, nonpartisan commission composed of five prominent Americans selected by each party and modeled on the 9/11 Commission. Although such a commission was opposed by my own leadership in the House, it overwhelmingly passed with the support of 35 Republican members. It was defeated by Republicans in the Senate. And that leaves us where we are today. We cannot leave the violence of January 6th and its causes uninvestigated. The American people deserve the full and open testimony of every person with knowledge of the planning and preparation for January 6th. We must know what happened here at the Capitol. We must also know what happened every minute of that day in the White House, every phone call, every conversation, every meeting leading up to, during, and after the attack. Honorable men and women have an obligation to step forward. If those responsible are not held accountable, and if Congress does not act responsibly, this will remain a cancer on our constitutional republic, undermining the peaceful transfer of power at the heart of our democratic system. We will face the threat of more violence in the months to come, and another January 6th every 4 years.
Wow. Another January 6th every 4 years. I see that. I see that. Liz Cheney, again, another person with whom I've never agreed on anything. In fact, I vehemently disagree with her on everything and don't like the woman, but she's standing up for what's right in terms of what's correct. You get the idea. So, of course, we have a troll in the YouTube chat room who I just kicked out because I have no patience for these people. This person was saying that Adam Kinzinger's tears, that he practiced crying the whole night before. Hey, Soledad, if that's your real name, which we know it isn't, I've got a little song for you. Yeah, you know, just in case you were wondering. One other thing we didn't even talk about was Simone Biles in the Olympics, because this overshadowed that. I say more power to her for taking care of herself. I don't know the specifics of what happened, but she pulled out of the team competition this morning after a bad, experience in the qualifying. And then today, this morning, her first event, the vault, she screwed it up and she said, that's it. I can't. And she said she's not physically hurt. She's having a mental thing. But good for her. So the question is she going to compete on Thursday in the individuals? We don't know. But good for her for putting her own needs ahead of the Olympics. Obviously, she's been under a lot of pressure. So that happened. All right. There was one other. I didn't play anything yet from Officer Fanone. Officer Fanone. Okay, so I told you at the end, they asked all of these cops, what should we be doing? What do you want from us? I played for you Harry Dunn, where he said, you know, go for the hitman. We often arrest the guy who pulls the trigger, but we need to find the hitman. We need to find out who was calling the shots here. And this was Officer Fanone.
And that rally occurred on January 6th, which I don't believe was a coincidence, that on January 6th, members of Congress you here in the room today were charged with tallying the electoral votes and certifying the election of our president. And in the academy, we learn about time, place, and circumstance in investigating potential crimes and those who may have committed them. And so the time, the place, and the circumstances of that rally, that rhetoric, and those events, to me, leads in the direction of our president and other members, not only of Congress and the Senate, but that is what I am looking for, is an investigation into those actions and activities which may have resulted in the events of January 6th.
You think?
And also whether or not there was collaboration between those members, their staff, and these terrorists.
Right. So we played for you, that's Fanone. We played Harry Dunn saying, get the hitman. This is Daniel Hodges, the one who was trapped in that doorway.
As patrol officers, we can only, you know, deal with the crimes that happen on the streets, the misdemeanors and occasionally the violent felonies. But you guys are the only ones we've got to deal with crimes that occur above us.
Huh.
I need you guys to address if anyone in power had a role in this, if anyone in power coordinated or aided or abetted or tried to downplay, tried to prevent the investigation of this terrorist attack, because we can't do it. We're not allowed to.
They're not allowed to.
And I think the majority of Americans are really looking forward to that as well.
So he's imploring them, get
Thank
to
you.
The bottom of who was behind this, because basically that's above our pay grade. We're not allowed to go there. Amazing. I'm telling you, if you've got cable, you know, you can go to cspan.org and watch the whole thing. It was only, 3 hours maybe? It was some powerful testimony. And the video was just, we thought we had seen it all, but we hadn't. I'm going to play you one more clip. This, again, is the Sergeant Aquilino Gunnell, who is still, I think in this clip he might say it, he's still on medical leave. He has been since that day when he got really hurt. Here's what he had to say.
I've been on medical, and I'm straight leave for much of the past 6 months. And I expect to need further rehabilitation for possibly more than a year. There are some who express outrage when someone kneels while calling for social justice. Where are those same people expressing the outrage to condemn the violence attack on law enforcement, the Capitol, and our American democracy? I'm still waiting for them. As Americans in the world watching horror what was happening at the Capitol, we did not receive timely reinforcement and support we needed. In contrast, during the Black Lives Matter protest last year, U.S. Capitol Police had all the support we needed and more.
Yeah. Again, this is, I'm just playing you tiny little clips of really, really important testimony. You know, there were a number of things that the Republicans tried to do to deflect people's attentions from this hearing going on. And two of the more reprehensible members of Congress, you know, the ones that you have to ask why they're there. My thing just closed here. Hold on, if I can get this up again. Marjorie Taylor Greene and her sidekick, Matt Gaetz, boy, there's a winning combo for you, if ever there was one, decided they were going to hold a press conference today while that hearing was going on in order to, you'll love this one, to call attention to the conditions under which Those terrorists are being held. They're protesting. They're standing up for, they think that the prisoners, the people who are still in jail from the January 6th insurrection, who are being held because their actions were so heinous, I don't know, they're being treated unfairly. But so I'm going to show you just a clip. I don't know who put this out. It probably is some obviously right wing online outlet, because their commentator, their reporter on the scene is rather funny talking. It's the intolerant left. The intolerant left shut us down. But so here's Marjorie Taylor Greene is at the microphones. Louis Gohmert is behind her, as is Matt Gaetz and Paul Gosar. So this is a winning, you know, the island of misfit toys, I think, but not nearly as lovable. All right. So here's when they got shut down.
People of this country, the answers to the questions.
We need a break. Okay. The left is interrupting the press.
The left is interrupting the press conference.
Thank
there's
you.
Signs
those
behind
of
them.
You that really care about this process. Thank you.
Oh God! Stop. The whistle. Oh my! But that's,
ladies and gentlemen, what you just saw here today is again the intolerant left.
Oh, the intolerant left. It was the intolerant left.
I had to actually. Here, I'll give those back now.
This poor reporter. The intolerant left. Yeah, I love that somebody said sex or rapists sit down, or people were around them with signs so they didn't get to do any of that. Yeah. Trying to think if I have anything here that I did not play that I want to get for you. There's so much more, by the way. I could go on for the full hour like this, but I do want to get to something else. But this was the first hearing of this new commission, the Special Select House Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. They wanted to hear from the law enforcement officers first, people who were directly impacted by these terrorists, the people who were on the scene who got injured that day, both physically and psychologically. The fact that this happened is just such a stain on this country. And the fact that virtually every Republican in Congress, with the exception of Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, are denying reality. This is why I always talk about opposite world, because this is where we live. All right. We will probably get back to this at a future date, certainly at the next hearing. But I just wanted to share with you some of what happened this morning, because it was so powerful. And oh, my God, that's going to stay with me for a long time. And actually, somebody said also on YouTube that most of the hearing is posted on YouTube as well. So if you don't have cable, you can still get it on YouTube. I suggest watching it, because that's knowledge is power. We need to know what happened, and you need to be able to answer to these cretins, these flat earthers who are like, there was a tourist day at the Capitol. Yeah, right. Yeah, in my nightmares, maybe. All right. So now I'm going to switch gears a little bit to talk about dysfunctional Florida. I come to you from South Florida, where we have this governor. His given name is Ron DeSantis. We refer to him as more on death sentence, because that's more, you know, appropriate. He has been, you know, throughout the pandemic against shutdowns, you know, against masks. He has not been, you know, very supportive of the vaccine rollout. He's just been a denier. He's a mini Trump. He wants to be Trump. He's an asshole to the media and to everyone else. He's a moron. He's just a fucking idiot who thinks he knows better than anyone. He talks down to people. He wags his finger in their face. You know, he's that kind of a guy. Just a real jerk. And for some reason, he is being touted as, you know, the next Trump. So he's like next in line to run for president should Donald decide not to do it, right? I guess it's now between him and Don Jr. They're battling it out for runner-up mode. But, you know, for some reason, the lemmings on the right keep following this guy. So to have elevated his his profile to where he's, you know, next in line for the Republican nomination. Florida, thanks to his policies, is now leading the country. We are the COVID epicenter of the country. We have more new cases here in the last couple of days than name the next five states combined. Florida, because of him. He's fighting the CDC, so that, telling the cruise industry, you cannot mandate vaccines if people are going to get on a cruise in Florida. Don't come to Florida. It's not safe. So worse than that, those of you who are regular listeners of the program know that towards the end of last year, I joined in with the progressives in the Florida Democratic Party to sort of infiltrate the Florida Democrats for a progressive takeover. Sadly, we were a little short. It didn't work. And unfortunately, the person who ultimately came out of this on top as the chairman of the Florida Democratic Party is a guy named Manny Diaz. He represents the past. He is old school Florida conservadem, horrible. The worst possible choice the Florida Democratic Party could have made, that's who they chose. So now we have these protests in Cuba. And as I tried to explain to you last week, South Florida is a different place when it comes to dealing with Cuba. Miami is Little Havana, or Havana North, however you want to put it. And it's overrun with Cubans who left the isle, but still the island, but still consider themselves Cuban. My thought is they should go back. If they consider Cuba their country and that's the flag they fly, go back and make things better yourself. Now, I'm a progressive Democrat, but I don't follow anyone's talking points. Nobody says this is what progressives think on the subject. This is where you need to go. I follow my own train of thought. My own train of thought is the Castros were horrible. And then the United States made their policies worse with the embargo and with a ban on remittances, not letting people send money to their family members who are still stuck in Cuba. Those people have no money, have very few resources. The Cuban government keeps them down. And then the U.S. government, on top of it, made things worse. Didn't foster a program until Obama to make things better for them. Obama came in, tried to open relations, normalize relations with them. And of course, Trump came in and reversed whatever Obama did. And things apparently have gotten so bad that for only the third time in 62 years, the people of Cuba took to the streets. So here we are in Florida. The Florida Democratic Party is split. We have the very conservative leadership of the Florida Democratic Party, and we do have a progressive faction. And so what happened was last week, there was an op-ed. Tell me I closed this window. I'm going to be really, really mad at myself. So Manny Diaz, after the protests began, I can't believe I did close that window. Okay. So now I got to search for it again. Miami Herald, Manny Diaz op-ed, and he name-checked the Democratic, you know what, let me see if I can just write Cuba, because that may bring it up. So he wrote an op-ed in the Miami Herald that was ostensibly about Cuba. But what he did was he used this op-ed to badmouth the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida. So he writes this op-ed. It starts with, "Last week, the Cuban communist regime once again showed the world that it is nothing more than a repressive dictatorship holding onto a failed and cruel social, economic, and political model. Unfortunately, some in the United States continue to hold a romanticized view of a revolution that maintains its power by weaponizing human suffering." Okay, where is he going with this, you wonder? Well, you skip down to the third paragraph, and he writes, "Instead of expressing outrage at the human misery of thousands of Cubans, there are many, including the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida, who failed to condemn these flagrant human rights abuses and instead have chosen to endorse the big lie promoted by the dictatorship that the U.S. embargo and Americans are to blame for Cuba's dismal state of affairs." That couldn't be any further from the truth. What they said, the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida in their press release was saying, not saying that the Cuban government was blameless, just saying that the one thing that the Americans have power over is this embargo and the remittances, that we need to loosen those up to help the people of Cuba. Instead, Manny Diaz decided that he's going to call out fellow Democrats in the Miami Herald. This is why I call it Florida. So I thought I would talk to the new president of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida. Joining us on the line right now is Carolina Ampudia. She's the newly elected president of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida. I always get the name screwed up because it's long, but it is that it's a caucus within the Democratic Party of Florida. Going out over YouTube, but I can't get the audio up for some odd reason. So after that whole big long buildup, I'm going to have to share that with you. You know what? I'll post the interview on the blog. And in the meantime, let me see if I can't find their response to Manny Diaz that I can certainly read to you. I don't know what's going on with my audio. I'm not feeding progressive voices. It's always something. Everything worked perfectly yesterday. I don't know what happened here. So anyway, let me share this statement with you. So if it'll open, you know, we're rolling along and rolling along, and then I get sort of held up here. Okay, so the Florida progressives respond to the criticism on the Cuba statement. This is from the guest that you couldn't hear, Carolina Ampudia. Sorry, I screw up her name all the time. So she released this statement. She wrote, over the past few weeks, there have been numerous demonstrations and statements about the current situation in Cuba from various political viewpoints. This is a healthy response in a democracy which allows for and encourages different political opinions. Everyone is in agreement that the Cuban people on the island are suffering. Though there may be disagreement on solutions, each of these diverse groups understand that the Cuban people need help. The well-being and right to self-determination of the Cuban people have always been at the center of the Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida's policy views on Cuba. We believe that causes of and responsibility for the shortages and other deprivations of the country and her people lie both with the regime itself and the nearly 60-year-long U.S. embargo. Duh. What the U.S. has within its power to do to help the Cuban people is normalization of relations between our two countries, which Obama began and Trump rolled back. That includes lifting the embargo, which was intended to dislodge the Castro regime. 60 years later, the embargo has not achieved that goal. We believe changing the current regime is in the hands of the Cuban people and the Cuban people alone. And now this is me again. The idiot mayor of Miami, once the protests began, suggested we bomb Cuba, as if his bombs could tell the difference between the bad government people and the innocent citizens who are being repressed. Idiots. Back to Carolina's statement. She writes, the Democratic Party is a very big policy tent to cover a multitude of issues and differences of opinion on how to address those issues. It is certainly not unexpected that Florida Democrats might have a difference of opinion on how to address the Cuba issue. It's become the third rail of Florida politics. We speak as progressive Democrats. We do not speak for all Florida Democrats or the party itself. That's why there are caucuses, to act as avenues for Democrats to express and advocate for specific policy positions. The statement by the chair of the Florida Democratic Party, published today by the Miami Herald, incorrectly states that the Florida Democratic Party has never supported lifting the embargo. As part of the Democratic Party, the Florida Democratic Party supported lifting the embargo in the 2016 DNC platform. In the same year, a poll referenced by the Miami Herald indicated that 70% of Cuban voters support lifting the embargo. However, we absolutely respect our chair's right to personally support lifting the embargo. However, we absolutely respect our chair's right to personally take a different position on Cuba and would hope that he can respect ours. We are, after all, on the same team.
Bullshit.
Sorry. That was just a computer glitch there. We want to be clear. The Democratic Progressive Caucus of Florida has always stood on the side of freedom and the right to dissent. We oppose the violence that the regime has perpetrated against those who are speaking out. However, the only viable way for us to help, beyond words, is to strongly urge our government to lift the embargo and continue on the path to normalization of the people of U.S. relations with the Caribbean nation. Once again, we call on President Biden and the United States Congress to support the people of Cuba by lifting the embargo. It makes sense to me. So I'll tell you what, I will probably... I can figure there's another way I can get this interview to play. And if you bear with me, when the regular show ends, I was going to say when it ends on Progressive Voices, but we're not even on Progressive Voices today. I was going to let it go. I know, Kay Park, this is on my end. Just so you know, I've been upgrading the studio. And when I upgrade the studio, I ostensibly screw something else up. So, yeah, I'm working on it. I will have it fixed tomorrow. I promise you. Promise you that. In the meantime, let me see if I can't find... I can't play it from there because you don't have audio and I can't pull it back out of there. I don't know why this won't work. And that one's not edited. And let me try one more place. I might be able to find it here. And if I do, then I can just play this interview for you because it's important. It's, you know, it's important things that we need to know. And no, I can't find it. Man, you know, I always start with good intentions, you know. Let me try one more place. Carolina, and that's not it. I try it one more time from here. And if that doesn't work, well, it won't work. I'll tell you what, we're gonna end. I did have other stuff to play. I guess we could talk a little bit about, I know what I want to talk about. The last thing is what we touched on before is COVID. So I'm here in Florida, in the COVID capital of the world. And the idiots out there are saying, we don't need no stinking vaccines and we're not going to wear no masks. Well, here's the other breaking news story. The CDC today changed their guidelines. And now they're saying that even people who've been vaccinated should wear masks indoors because it's spreading again. This was from before they made the announcement around 3 o'clock this afternoon. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is reversing its recommendations from early May when it said it was safe for vaccinated people to go maskless indoors because of the protection afforded by the vaccines. Coronavirus infections were dropping sharply at that time, and the highly infectious Delta variant had yet to gain traction in the U.S. Well, now everything has changed, and it's spreading really quickly. We opened up too fast. We simply did. People wanted this to be done with, and I think smarter minds were misled, and they opened things up too fast, and they shouldn't have. Just like I didn't do this art event this weekend because it's not safe. Too many people are walking around unvaccinated. Too many people are walking around unmasked. And we've been vigilant for, 18 months now? We need to hunker down a little longer until everybody gets vaccinated. Please get vaccinated. I don't know what you're waiting for at this point. You know, if you don't, maybe we need to... start up COVID colonies instead of leper colonies, COVID colonies. You want to be unvaccinated? All right, we'll give you the states of Tennessee, Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas. How about that? You take those states, you all go there and let the rest of us get on with our lives. Just an idea. All right, tomorrow, if he doesn't cancel, I do have Philip Rucker of the Washington Post coming on to talk about their new book, which I have here somewhere. You know, I Alone Can Fix It. So we'll do that tomorrow. I will have the audio fixed tomorrow, I promise. Sorry about the tech issues. It's always something. It's not one thing, it's another. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. I will see you tomorrow.